Welcome to a special edition of our unique NUFC podcast. In a week where Amanda Staveley's been in touch with the refereeing powers that be, we decided to speak to the only voice of reason, the ex-chief and legendary referee, Keith Hackett. Welcome to Black and White with Arab News. A warm welcome to our sport editor who runs an equally tight ship. It's our very own Ali Khaled. Ali, are you as thrilled as me to have Keith at the helm today?
I'm very thrilled and I'm very excited because it's so timely, I think. You know, over the last week, so many controversial decisions last week, 10 days. Mm. And Peter, you know, we talk about the VAR like over and over and over. It seems to be like every week there's a decision. But even considering that, I think the last week has been, you know, like almost like some sort of tipping point has happened. I mean, I've heard people who used to be in favor of VAR saying, let's just get rid of it. You know, I mean, that's how bad it's been. I think Newcastle, again, involved in one against Crystal Palace. As you know, Pete, I was traveling, so I didn't get to see everything. You know, I've just caught a few highlights here and there. And obviously the big one, the one at West Ham, where I think it's really sort of, you know, from everyone's reaction, it's almost inexplicable and it's pushed people over the edge and saying, let's get rid of the VAR, which I don't personally agree with. But yeah, can't wait to see what Keith has to say about all this.
Well, I'm going to dive straight in. Keith, it's great to see you. Straight into it, as I've said, we can talk about West Ham. We can talk about the Newcastle disallowed goal.
Yeah, sure.
One of many awful decisions in recent weeks. Has the phone been hotline to Hackett?
I think it's been absolutely crazy. You know, I think this last weekend was perhaps the worst weekend I've seen in officiating here in England. And I've been involved for over 50 years. There were far too many mistakes. And when you look at them, they weren't complicated errors. They were easy decisions. First one was, of course, the Newcastle United one, where Willett was clearly pushed into the goalkeeper. So you wait to think, is the referee going to award a penalty kick? Because it should have been a penalty, right? But no, he's actually played a brilliant advantage. The ball's in the back of the net. It's a goal. And then we go through the nonsense of actually saying Willock has fouled the goalkeeper. Now, you and I have seen the same film clip, and it's unreasonable to even consider that view. So for me, it was a good goal. It was not a clear and obvious error by the referee, and therefore the goal should have stood. And this, the big worry is the overindulgence of the VARs. We then go to another game, rightly just mentioned, the West Ham game, where the goalkeeper comes out at the feet of Jared Bowen, who, in fairness, takes evasive action, jumps over the goalkeeper. There's no foul. There's absolutely no foul. The ball's in the back of the net. VAR comes in. They rule out the goal. We then go to the Forest game. Michael Oliver, our best referee in charge, is absolutely looking on at the decision. He's given a penalty kick. I agree with him 100%. He then gets a buzz in his ear. Go and look at the screen. He goes to the screen, and Michael Oliver should be praised because he stays with his decision. Now, this is absolutely a rare occasion.
Yeah.
And then we have the Leeds scenario where the Leeds player's coming towards the penalty area. His shirt is pulled. It's extended. Everybody can see very clearly it's a foul. But he continues into the penalty area. And I'm thinking, this is a good piece of action by the referee. He's then fouled. Outcome, no penalty kick, no VAR intervention. So it's a disaster. And I'm not surprised that people are beginning to recognise that VAR should be taken out of the game. I disagree with that view. Technology is there to help. This is about the people. This is about the referees. This is about the VAR, how it's operated, how it's managed. And I think the frustration of clubs, managers and fans.
Okay. On that note, Ali, as a fan, and not just my co-host on this podcast, but a football fan who I deem to be, all joking aside, I know we have fun and we have a giggle, but I would say you're possibly one of the brightest football fans and writers that I've come across. So from a fan's perspective, tell me, how damning would it have to be to listen to these calls to remove VAR?
I mean, honestly, I think it's the refereeing has been bad for a long time. You know, I mean, a lot of people have mentioned that you don't see the same issues in you know, I watch a lot of European football. I know you do sometimes, Peter, and you don't see the same, you don't see the same issue, the points of discussion week after week after week. And one of the things that really gets me, and I'd be really interested to see what Keith says about that, is that so we brought VAR to add to the referee skill set. But what's happened is, like, referees are not taking decisions that, you know, pre-VAR would have been obvious, would have been sort of like simple ones, absolutely simple decisions before VAR existed. Like, that's a penalty, that's a handball, you know, like, you know, and no one would complain, all that. And they've, like, sort of abdicated taking these decisions, you know. And, you know, so this VAR, which was brought in to add to their skill set, has taken away from their skill set, you know. And it's absolutely, like, you know, the marginal decisions. I think, you know, sometimes we all get angry, you know, if it takes 4 or 5 minutes, then surely it's not obvious, you know. But at least, you know, there's a discussion there, you know. But, like, it's the really obvious ones that don't need VAR, that pre-VAR, nobody would have given a second thought to, that are, like, you know, are becoming controversial. And again, you know, say, like, we don't see that in Spain. We don't see that in Italy. I mean, there are controversies, of course, everywhere, but not to this extent. And, you know, you watch Sky, or over here we watch, in this part of the world, we watch BN and we watch the Premier League games. And there's no real discussion of, like, tactics anymore, or, like, skills and all that. Yeah. All we ever talk about is VAR. I mean, so I'm 100% with Keith on that. I think something should be done to keep it. But, yeah, I'm just, you know.
Well, Ali, if I can come in. You know, if your car's not running well, you go to a garage and fix it. You have a mechanic. If your business is not running well, then ultimately, at the end of the day, if you're employing anybody, you get rid of them. You get better people. There's no doubts in my mind. I've said it, been saying it for a number of years, that the leadership of the PGMOL has been lacking. And what we've seen is we've seen money thrown at it to try and resolve the issues. It isn't the issue. This is about people managing a business and managing people effectively. So for me, that's the first root of the problem. You're spot on, because I can remember having a discussion with a top former international rugby union referee, Nigel Owens, who said to me, when they went through the process of introducing the similar system, they said for a period of time we had lazy officials. That's what we've got now. We've got in the Premier League lazy officials who are either operating in fear and not in confidence. And we have communication problems, because the one thing that you do in match officiating, when you have colleagues on the line, this is why I brought in the communication kits that are now used worldwide. Talk to each other, give a view, get the right decision. So what we need to do, I think, is to say, right, get rid of the personnel that's there. That's happening. But it's not going to change until December. That's too long in a Premier League season. So we've got to have an interim boss that comes in and takes charge of VAR. Absolutely, number one. Number two, close Stockley Park. And that, the reason I say that, it's a tower. It's become an ivory tower where nobody can talk to them, and everything they do, they think they've got right. No accountability. So let us take the VAR, as they do in the MLS generally, take them to the ground. So they're part of the team. And VARs can only be VAR. What we've got in England, which is unlike in other countries, we can have a guy refereeing at Anfield on a Friday night, getting out of the ground at 11, 11.30, then driving to Stockley Park, because at 12.30 the following day is VAR. He's refereed one game, he's VAR the next. Look, we have assistant referees, that's all they do. They're assistant referees, they become skilled in that technique, how they make decisions, everything that goes with it. We need to do that with VAR. So let's have a panel of VARs. And these can be ex-referees. I'm not entering for a job, by the way, but we've got enough people around who could do that job very effectively. I'm not against bringing in a couple of three players into that group and going through the training process, because their skill sets will help to educate those VARs. And people say to me, because I mentioned that earlier in the week, they went, nah, you can't have that, you can't have X-Play. Well, I've got news for them. For the last 10, 15 years, we have a panel of match delegates operating at the Premier League. I introduced that panel. They're former managers, former players. They view the referee's performance just like the assessor, and they report on it. But they go in and talk after the match. So I think that is some of the things that need to be done, because they've got to change. And if they don't change soon, then we're in trouble. The other point is this. I read this week that after the Newcastle fiasco, and let's make no mistake about it, you're absolutely right. This is a straight decision for the referee to make. It's not a difficult call. It's not one where you've got players blocking your view or anything like that. This, you know, the process of a referee is to see, recognize, think, and act. So the failure in decision-making process is if the referee does not see. That's why we need VAR. 22 cameras at a game, we need that help. Therefore, it's got to be made to be right. So what happens is Newcastle make the complaint. I think I'd be knocking on the door of their building, because that's what I used to do when I was the boss. I'd go and see these managers, face them up, and have a discussion. So the PGML, or there was a response from the Premier League saying, we're going to investigate this. We're going to investigate this decision at Newcastle. I smiled, because the PGMOL is funded by the Premier League, the FA, and the Football League, and they are the board of directors. All they have to do is walk down the corridor, knock on the boss's door of the PGMOL, and ask the question. But there's no answer. There's no answer, because it's another one that's wrong, and it's another one that's wrong. And there is no sign at this moment in time of changes to make things better. And the simple thing that they've got to do is get these guys in a room and get a very clear understanding of video action, use the clips, use the instances across the season, across last season, and agree what is a clear and obvious error, because the line is confusing.
Yeah. Keith, I mean, one of the things that really, again, I've noticed, and it's quite irritating. Already we have, you know, like by its nature, VAR, of course, like will interrupt celebrations or, you know, whether it's a penalty or it's a goal, whatever. You already have to wait on that. But like now, if you notice, you know, as you mentioned, the Forest and Michael Oliver incident, is that, you know, they rarely, you know, if they're going to the screen, you know it's going to get changed. So now,
absolutely.
So now fans either celebrate or moan the minute he starts running to the because they know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They know like whatever the decision, you know, is going to be like overturned. You know, like that's the reason he's going there. So fan, whether, you know, depending on which side you're on, you start hearing the celebrations and the mourning at that moment, because, and you know, and hardly ever, you know, you get a referee run over and come back, you know, say, no, you know what, I'm going to stick with this, or you know. It's like, you know, the fun's been taken one step at a time, you know, like, you know, we're being, you know, the fun's been taken out of
it. But fans are being treated differently, aren't they? Because I can be at home and I can be seeing and listening into things that in the stadium you're not. So people say the delay is the problem. The delay is exaggerated in the stadium by the very nature that 2-3 minutes standing around waiting for a call is pretty boring in the entertainment business. It's a little bit like the guy who's on the stage and, just a minute, I'm going off for 5 minutes, you know, and leaves everybody in suspense. We know generally that you're absolutely right. They go to the screen, it becomes a walk of shame. And it also becomes, it's easier for the referee to go with the VAR, because then what happens is that hot potato is thrown to the guy. It's him to blame, not me.
Yeah.
So they become defensive. So, again, one of the things that I've been harping on about for probably too long, and that is transparency. Let's have the big screen. We've got them. Okay, a couple of clubs haven't. The one that you support doesn't at the moment.
Yep,
and neither does the one in Manchester. They've got to get them. You know, in this modern age of technology, drop-down screens and all those sort of things are so easy to install. And then we go through the same process as we see in rugby. You know, I've allowed a goal at Newcastle. I've allowed a goal. Give me any reason why I should not allow that goal. if this is the question that needs to be asked. And therefore, the referee should lead the scenario, not the VAR. He might press the button and say, I think you need to have a look at something, or you need to just consider it. Let's just play it. And then, of course, you know, when you see slow motion, you can actually say the car's going to crash. And then, in fact, they miss each other because you've assumed there's going to be a crash. It's built in the mind. So slow motion does that in the thought process. Don't have slow motion. See it at normal speed. And if you come away and say, right, fine, you're going to live with slow motion, and television can do that and expose you, stick with what you're seeing in front of you. So I think transparency is so important. Then the other thing is accountability. Look, I was a tough, if you like, boss, because I said, I'm going to operate like the 21st manager of the Premier League. And if the number nine is not putting the ball in the net, because that's his job, I'm going to be asking questions. Is that down to my tactics, my preparation of that particular player or referee, in this, my case, or is he delivering the level of performance that I expect? And if not, you've then got to be the boss that says, you know, you're not doing the job as we expected. You're an elite match official. You're earning a lot of money. There's no jealousy here, because I'm the guy that actually went to the Premier League and said, we need professional referees, because the game was getting quicker. I brought in sports science, sports psychology, nutritionists, vision science in, and measurement tools that said, I've got everything that judges your performance accurately. I don't work on perception, because perception's has passion and it has all the things that deflect. What I've got to do is I've got to analyze that decision very carefully. So,
Keith, can I interrupt you and ask you, because we are pressed for time, but I just wanted to know for my own benefit, you talk about treating them as players, and that's just triggered something in my mind. So last question, just for today, because we will get you back on, because it's fascinating, is do the refs rewatch, like any good player, do they watch the match back and look at their own performance?
They should do. I encourage that. I provided them with the information, with a lot more information, because the system that I operated also had, if you like, the speed at which they were running, the viewing angles. I could use a system to do that, and also the distance from the ball, where the colleagues were, interrogating all the incidents, and the referee could do that. But then what we did very quickly was to come into the room the following, you know, couple of days later of the weekend games, analyze the good bits and the indifferent ones in front of all the referees. And I used to say to the referee, talk me through it. It wasn't a walk of shame or anything. Talk me through how you got to that decision. Then we'd have other referees, their colleagues, saying, well, we agree with the referee's decision, or we disagree. Maybe to the referee, he would say, look, you're out of position. You need to work on your sprinting speed. You need to get closer to play. So if you like, it was a bit of thorough review of performance, self-analysis, which they had to do in writing, by the way. They had to write down various aspects. And then I could look at, with the sports psychologist and with the vision scientists, etc., we could look at various things in terms of how we approve this performance. And it, particularly around body language, other aspects.
Fascinating. Listen, Keith, we are going to get you back on. It's been absolutely fascinating. All I can say is this weekend, I wish there was a Keith Hackett in the stadium, a Keith Hackett in VAR Darsley Park, and a Keith Hackett running the line. Brilliant to see you. And we'll speak to you really soon. Okay, AK, the fascinating Keith Hackett, could talk to him all day. But we do have games to look forward to at the weekend. And it's a trip to the capital for Newcastle. Can they get the players back in time? Because if they do, Ali, if they can get these players back, I quite fancy a result at West Ham.
Yeah, you know what? I've been, with the exception of the Liverpool game, which I predicted correctly, just about, you know, with that late goal. You know, I've been quite positive with the predictions of Newcastle. It's been a bit strange in that they've played well. And last week I mentioned how, you know, they've shown different ways of playing. They've had, you know, like very confident performances they've had, like resilient performances they've had, like late comebacks. And, you know, obviously, I guess Liverpool, they played really, really well, but ended up losing. But it's like, you know, you want to turn those draws into wins, you know. I don't think it's anything that's too concerning at this point. But at the same time, you know, the only win of the season so far has come on the opening day against Forest, which was expected and was a very, very good performance. Since then, they've played well enough to win games, and they haven't. And I know, obviously, the Liverpool game was, you know, a few seconds away from being a draw. And the Wolves game was a few seconds away from, or a few minutes away from being a loss, you know. So overall, I think it's good. You know, like the level that Newcastle have shown has been good. The players have played well. I think the, you know, it's just that, you know, you don't want it to become a concern. I don't think it is just yet, but you want that second win. You want to get back to winning ways. And I do think, you know, I mean, West Ham, you know, we're very close to getting a draw against Chelsea, obviously, with that decision. And I think that would have changed the mood at West Ham. You know, they would have been very, very, you know, positive, I think, going into this game. But I feel like they are a bit down. And, you know, obviously, you know, just literally as well in the table, you know, they need the points. So they are under pressure. I think they'll be more under pressure than Newcastle in this game. I can see Newcastle definitely getting a draw and possibly a win as well.
It's funny you say that. You know, it's so frustrating for Newcastle fans, because you're spot on with what you say. It just looks like there's something missing. And that little bit of something missing is either service to a new centre-forward who was unlucky. And what I love about him is he's in the right place at the right time. Mm. So I think that will come when your Brunos come back and Elliot Anderson possibly gets a run, because he looks great. So I think it's just that building up to it. But also the danger is as well, people say, yeah, you want to go to West Ham, they're not playing well. Their form has got to change as well. So it could be a tough game. But we could be in line to see the Battle of Brazil Alley with the two best friends, Paqueta versus Bruno.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, for a long time, we thought Paqueta might end up at Newcastle, of course. And then West Ham, I'm sure Bruno would have loved that as well. He's ended up at West Ham. West Ham have a good team. You know, they've got some really, really good players. I don't think, you know, so far they've gelled this season with some of, like, in Scamacca and obviously Paqueta is still very new. But, you know, they've been quite, they've been unlucky in certain matches, of course, like, you know, like the Chelsea match and all that. But, you know, you're right. You know, they are going to, at some point, it's gonna turn their way, you know. But to go back to Newcastle and Alexander Isak, you know, a fantastic signing. I mean, showed against Liverpool with the goal and with the disallowed goal, like his skill. And you will hope that with Bruno Guimarães coming back, you know, the service will improve. But I'm going to say one thing again, and I keep repeating it all the time as well. You need the other players to contribute. You know, we keep talking about, like, you know, you need goals to come from elsewhere. You know, like, there was too much, you know, on burden on Callum Wilson. And now there's probably, like, a similar amount of expectation from Isak. Some of the players, I mean, Alan Saint-Maximin has been brilliant in some games recently. But, you know, we always said, like, the two wide players, whether it's him and Almiron or whoever it is, you know, they need to start, and the midfield as well, they need to, like, contribute and take pressure off, you know. So that what happens against Crystal Palace is that if the centre forward doesn't score, the goals need to come from somewhere else.
Absolutely. Ian Wright warned West Ham that Isak is one of the most dangerous strikers on the planet. Hopefully will be at the weekend. That news should excite us Toon fans. I'm going to ask you, as always, before we knock off for this episode, predictions.
I'm going to go for West Ham 2, Newcastle 2.
Okay, lots of goals for that one. It's a tough game. And as I say, they won't fancy it. West Ham, something has to give. Hopefully it'll be 3 points for Newcastle. Ali, as always, an absolute pleasure to see you. That's it for this episode of Black and White with Arab News. We'll see you next week. How are the lads?